Hello and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoons, the weekly podcast that revisits, reviews, and ridicules some of the world's weirdest animated series. I'll be your host, as always, Dave Trumbore, and joining me today, from the D.C. area, Sean Paul Ellis. How's it going?
David, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not too bad. And also joining us, as always, from the West Coast, it's Matt Barron. How are you today, sir?
I am fantastic.
That's
how are you guys?
Good. We are talking about Barron's pick this week, and it was a really, really good one. I'm happy to say that I really got into this show. Thank you to Hulu Plus for making it very, very accessible. You can just kind of watch them in bulk, which was much nicer than having to hunt and peck and scour the internet for every individual episode. Of course, we're talking Reboot today. If you listen to our last episode, we will be talking Reboot. If you are not familiar with it, you will be soon. And Sean's about to give you a little bit of history on the background. This one's pretty interesting, too, so I'll let Sean tell you a little bit about that.
Thanks, Dave. So Reboot was the first half an hour completely CGI cartoon. It was created by a Canadian, it's a Canadian CGI animated action adventure. And it originally aired between 1994 and 2001. Unlike a lot of the other cartoons that we have watched and discussed, this actually went for four seasons, and it had a reasonable 48 episodes that were produced, which makes you believe that somebody behind the helm of this had some intelligence in producing all of these. So it was produced by a Vancouver-based production company called Mainframe Entertainment, Alliance Communications, and BLT. This is interesting. It's just none of these are Deke or Ruby Spears.
The big names in animation,
Right. So just kind of keeping in mind, as I mentioned, this came out in 1994. And one of the things that we were discussing is just sort of a lot of the, and we'll talk a little bit more about the tech speak, but I wanted to kind of give everybody a quick overview in terms of history of when this show and commercial internet became available, as well as also when a lot of these 3D applications became available, just to kind of give everybody some context. And so 1989 is when what we use now, HTTP protocol and HTML, were proposed and created by Tim Berners-Lee. It was in 1989 or 1990 that services, internet commercial services such as CompuServe became available. 1990, the first version of 3D Studio, which if anybody's ever done any computer 3D digital art, I'm sure that they're probably aware of it. 3D Studio would eventually become 3D Studio Max. It was it went through some cycling in terms of the names, but that came out in 1990. 1991, commercial AOL becomes available. 1992. Windows version 3.1X becomes available. I mean, this is just
all
to give you
sick.
Remember it fondly.
You think about 1994 Reboot comes out.
Yeah,
And then 1998 we had Windows 98, as well as also Maya, which was a competitor to 3D Studio, came out during that time. So it was just interesting because I had been talking with. I've been talking with Dave a little bit earlier, and it was very interesting to note that I've used 3D Studio Max and I've used Maya when I was in college a couple times. And it was very interesting that a lot of the things, a lot of the textures, a lot of the images or graphics that I saw in Reboot are sort of like the base skins and textures that you would see that kind of came bundled with those specific.
Like the beginner's pack,
With 3D Studio Max.
And so the 30-day trial.
Yeah, exactly. Free trial.
And so it was very funny to see some of these textures and just be like, oh my God, I've created that donut shape that they're using to create that thing. Like that's what every tutorial teaches you, how to create. And so it was very comical when going through and watching a lot of this show.
Yeah, and I gotta give a shout out to a fan site called Reboot Revival. They have a ton of information that we use to pull some references from for episode synopses and upcoming news, which we'll get to in a little bit. But they've got a lot of cool history and stuff there too. So just wanted to plug them, and you can go dig in a little bit deeper over there. Sean gave us a nice rundown of the history there But it took these guys a while to really kind of get started. Like, they had the idea in the 80s, but like Sean, you just mentioned, the tech just wasn't there yet. So they had the idea for it, and they had to wait till the tech kind of came along. And then even over the course of just the four seasons, you can see there's a big leap from season two to season three in the, how much better the graphics get. Also much creepier. We could talk about the Uncanny Valley in a little bit too. Because
I mean, yeah, it does. It gets not only much creepier, but it gets much darker.
Yeah, so the tone of the show is a lot darker, and then the look of the show is somewhat more realistic than it was before, which is actually creepier, because the closer they get to looking realistic, the creepier they get. We can talk about the Uncanny Valley in a little bit, but I just want to make a quick mention of a little bit of the voice cast. One person that voices a villain who we'll talk about in a little bit, his name is Tony J. Now, that's not the villain's name, because that would be a terrible villain name. That's the guy who voices him. And I want you to keep that in mind, because that's going to come up with my recommendation later on in this show. So that's an important one to keep in mind. These guys don't know what I'm talking about yet, but we'll all find out together. To talk a little bit more about the show, since it was his pick this week, I'm going to let Baron fill you in on what the hell this thing was about.
Okay, so this was about a city... which was a system called Mainframe. And the main characters were Bob, to a lesser extent, Fong, Dot Matrix and Enzo Matrix, who were brother and sister. And then two villains, Megabyte, who had a much more prominent role, Hexadecimal, who was kind of like a side character, but came in and out of the story, and then in the later seasons was much more involved. Spoiler alert, once Megabyte was out of the picture. But Megabyte and Hexadecimal were brother and sister from a virus called Kilobyte. And then there were some other, characters once we get into the later seasons, but they were really ancillary. But these, breakdown would be Bob, the guardian of Mainframe, would try to defeat the user in games to protect the system from being destroyed, protect the system from further infection from Megabyte and Hexadecimal, the virus. So it was kind of like that good versus evil, kind of reboot of all the other cartoons we've watched. But one of the things was Enzo really looks up to Bob as a guardian and wants to be a guardian,
right,
which is really kind of, a huge motivator for the storyline from about season three forward.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a big change that goes, Enzo undergoes, which we can talk about in a little bit. For people who aren't familiar with the show, I want to give you kind of just a really, really general view of it. It all takes place inside a computer. So if you know Tron, it's very, very similar to that, but a little more
cartoonish. Yeah, it is strikingly similar to Tron,
But they have a little more fun with it. Like, Tron's relatively serious,
Yeah.
I mean, for being inside a computer and playing computer games.
No, but, I mean, there were moments where they are breaking the fourth wall in this show, and they are, like, they are straight mugging to the audience. They're just like, look at us. We're looking at you.
TV. Mike TV is the only character I have to talk about to get the idea of like what the tone of the show can be about sometimes. It's basically
Mike the TV was hilarious.
He was pretty funny, but he's also very annoying. He was kind of like the mock announcer that you've heard on every game show or every used car lot or anything, any sales pitch on a commercial out there. But he's kind of like, he's almost like the Deadpool of this world. He kind of just, he goes in between talking directly to the audience and back. But yeah, they do a lot of breaking the fourth wall in this. But basically, so they're in, the city, like Matt mentioned, called Mainframe. It exists within a computer. And it's not, the thing that's a little more interesting than Tron, at least to me, as I was a kid watching it, was there is a user on the other side of this computer. So this computer exists, and there's lots of theories as to where exactly it exists. Is it in a family home that everybody uses the computer? Is it some dumb little kid's computer that he plays on all the time? Is it a...
Is it public
exactly.
computer that's in, like, a library?
And then nobody updates or defrags or runs a virus.
And it's just deeply clogged with pornography.
Which, oddly enough, Reboot, the kids show, never gets into. But you can find that on DeviantArt, no problem.
Why do I feel like you've spent part of
the really, I want
just
to add,
looking on DeviantArt.
Like, dude, I want to add a new page, like a hidden, like a secret access page on our website.
So SaturdayMorningCartoons.com/rule34.
/afterdark. Because pretty much everything we've talked about so far, this is what, our 12th show. Every single one of them, no matter how obscure or how popular, there is weird fanfic and art and hentai and just weird stuff out there, man. So,
and you know what? And here's the thing. You know, for the people who are doing this stuff and are putting that stuff out on DeviantArt, you know what? I'm really proud of you.
Awesome.
People.
I love the enthusiasm.
Yeah, I mean, like, Andrea, like, she was already, like, overly sexily dressed for this show. Like, Dot had some unnecessarily perky tits.
Well, now, here's a funny story. We'll scoot away from Baron's creepiness for a second, and here's a really funny story.
Let's lean into Baron's creepiness on this.
I'm trying to distance myself from it because I was already I was already deep within that uncanny valley.
You shut up, Matt. You continue.
No, there was a lot of rancor behind the scenes with the executives, the producers. They didn't want certain attributes in some of these characters. Remember, this is the first time that we're seeing these computer-generated characters. So they're not hand-drawn, they're not animated in the traditional way. Producers and censors didn't know what was going to happen, so they were really just laying, you know, the black marks across. They were just like, nope, this isn't going to happen, isn't going to happen. To Matt's point, Dot Matrix's breasts were basically like too realistic for them.
Breasts
were too realistic for them.
Dave, I want to say that was the most awkward way that you've ever referred to like physical attributes of a woman.
Thank you very much.
It was so stilted and creepy.
Breasts.
It was worse than Matt. Than what Matt just said a couple minutes ago about referring to CGI tits.
Look, I'm gonna
you're like one step away from trying to like break it down into like the biology. You're like, well, the mammary gland.
I could, if you really want me to. I could.
Call them boobs.
Well, I'm gonna tell you why I said breasts, because the guys in the animation studio, they had the censors were like, look, they can't be that realistic. You got to do something about that. So they coined the term mono breast, which is why Dot Matrix has just like one weird cylindrical rack that goes across her chest. That's it. It's such a bizarre thought.
Like, no.
Thanks to Reboot Revival for that little tidbit of information. Glad I shared it with everyone today. But yeah, lots of weird censoring going on. But obviously they kind of threw that out the window once the third, fourth season came along. Cause like Matt said, Andrea was just kind of, she was like a cosplayer today. Just kind of out there having good times. Anyway,
you know,
derailed.
I think that actually plays into something that's pretty interesting about this show, is that there are a lot of really strong female characters in this. Like, for a lot of the cartoons that we have watched, you know, like, obviously, Dinosaucers, you know, they had, like,
God,
the...
Why would you even bring that up?
Why would I not bring it up is another question. You know, they had, like, one female character and pretty much one human female character, you know, in the entire show, you know. Pirates of Darkwater really had only one consistent female character. Cops had like no, other than like Whitney Morgan, the newscaster,
or the villain.
Or what was it? There was I think there was actually a misdemeanor, and then I think there was actually like a female cop called like Mainframe. She was the computer hacker or some crap like that.
Yeah, and then two of them were villains. It was Misdemeanor and what was the one that ended up having a romantic relationship with what's his face? Oh man, we just talked about it too. But anyway, geez. There were two of them.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry about it. It's fine. But like this show,
Hey, go back and listen to the episode. I'm sure it'll be in there somewhere.
It's a terrible show that we're trying
it's
to
really
forget.
Bad.
Just move on.
All right.
So this show does a really good job, especially like in later seasons from season two on about like introducing, creating like a lot of very strong female characters.
Well, look, I'll tell you, even in the early goings, I don't remember exactly which episode it was because I watched way too many of these, but. Another point I want to make, so there's a user, he plays games, those games impact the characters that are in this world, and it's actually a really dangerous thing. It's almost like a natural disaster to them, because if they don't win these games, that sector that the GameCube kind of lands in gets wiped out, and all the residents that were in there get turned into these little slug-like things called nulls. So they get basically just wiped out of existence and turned into slugs. So no good. So they want to win the games, and that's what Bob and Dot and Enzo help them do. They're almost like a little bit more advanced AI that helps to fight against the user. Anyway, what was my point to that whole thing that you were just talking about?
Oh. And you brought up an interesting thing, and I'm going to continue to do this for the rest of the episode. You mentioned the word null. And so, like, if people aren't familiar with what null is,
yes, please do.
All right, it's in computer science, it's used for like an uninitialized, undefined, or like an empty value.
Right.
And so they use and they inject a lot of like computer science and just like kind of 80s and 90s like computer speak into this show,
yeah, correctly or otherwise.
It's very incorrectly, and so being somebody who writes software, like watching it, I just kind of like my teeth are like nothing. I was just grinding the hell out of it.
You just got to take it as like creative license, like just a lot of buzzwords for. I mean, it was for kids, so they didn't know unless they were already like into coding and stuff. They didn't really know. But I want to finish up real quick on your point about strong female characters. Just real quick. One of the games that they were in, it was basically like a knights versus dragons kind of game.
And yeah, it was like episode 3.
Yeah, it was really early on. And so Bob gets in there. He reboots, which is, we should probably explain. It's this little emblem that they have on their like jumpsuits, their outfits. They're
called PIs, personal identifiers.
Thank you for that, sir. Thank you for the fact check. So they touch them and reboot, and that gives them attributes, uniforms, weapons, skills, everything they need to know for that particular game, among other things. But within the game itself, when they reboot, they basically join into the game. So when Bob does that, he becomes a knight. Go ahead, Sean.
Oh, no, go ahead. Oh. Bob becomes a knight.
So Bob becomes a knight. He hears off in the distance this damsel in distress, just like kind of screaming for help. So he looks around. There's nobody around him. He assumes that that's Dot, and he's got to go save Dot. So it sets up like a very, standard hero saves the girl kind of thing. So anyway, he goes through this whole thing, and he's battling the user, and he's flying dragons, and he gets to this tower. And he gets up to the tower, and he goes to rescue the damsel. It's Enzo. It's the little kid.
Right.
And there was a really funny aside where he was just like, I rebooted and I tried to be a knight, but I ended up being a damsel in this dress.
He's like, get me out of it. It's embarrassing.
But he says a damsel in this dress, and that just cracked me up because it was so cheesy. and then he's like, well, where's Dot? And then Dot comes like crashing through the wall, battling the user, and they're both in armor. And she's like, I could probably take him, but it would be nice if you helped me out over here. And then they like defeat him together. So that was cool. That was when,
they defeat him, not the two knights. Like Bob begins to fight the user.
Right.
Dot continues to fight the user once she finds out what the weak point is. And then Enzo, as the damsel in distress. Throws his megaphone, which changes his voice against the PI that's on the user and knocks him out a window, winning the game for them. So it's a group effort.
Yeah. So, I mean, from early on, they established, like, okay, it's not going to be just, like, the typical storylines like we've seen before. They're going to change it up a little bit. It's going to be a little strange. It's going to be a little stilted at times. But it's going to be different. And I think that was a good starting point for them because it led to stronger episodes later on and strong character development for pretty much everybody. Everybody goes through different arcs at different times. So
And Matt, you said that PI stands for?
Personal Identifier.
There you go.
Okay. That's just very interesting. That'll be my second point in terms of computer science stuff.
Go.
Or just cybersecurity is PII, which is the current present term that they use for personally identifiable information.
See, and you need that in case your system crashes and you need to log everybody so that when they restart the system, notice I didn't say reboot, when they restart the system, you can come back again.
Why don't you just say reboot? Say reboot?
I'm already on shaky ground.
You went out of your way.
I did. I really did.
You really did?
I really did.
Just knock it off.
Oh, man. So, you guys each watched the first episode, I believe. I watched that as well with you. We get an introduction to the characters in that first episode. Do you guys, give me your impressions of, like, Bob when you first see him on the scene, and then we'll get to Dot and Enzo a little bit, too, because that's really the main trio that takes us through everything.
Okay, so here was my first impression of Bob, and I kind of wanted to pose this to everybody. Bob's really shitty at his job, right?
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. All right. I just wanted to make sure. Like, Bob is a guardian, so like he is supposed to be the person that like enters the game when it comes into the city, and he's the one that's supposed to kind of protect everybody from the game and the user by competing against the user and winning. like, Bob does a good job inside of the games, and in most cases, he's, like, he's barely winning by, like, a thread in most of these games. His other job, like, the other responsibilities that he has, he's pretty shitty at doing it.
I believe those responsibilities would be to mend and defend.
Yes.
Mend and defend.
Not delete and defend, but mend and defend.
Well, here's the thing, is that, like, we've already acknowledged the fact that, like, the user is somebody that, like, you know, is sort of – there's a lot of speculation behind who the user or who the users in fact are. So in the introduction to this show, Bob poses the kind of his goal, which is that he wants to figure out who the user is, like what the user is. Yeah, like
his theories.
He flat out says, like, he's just like, you know, my job is to find out, you know, who the user is and, like, find out what's happening about them. He doesn't, like, in four seasons, he never really accomplishes
that. No, they kind of get away from that. It's weird. You learn a little bit of Bob's backstory. Like, so he narrates the beginning. Now, Matt and I offline were saying, I said to him, like, man, this theme song, like, I watched 20 episodes of this and I still can't really remember the theme song. But Matt knew the narration, like, down, like, he just had it. And it's basically Bob saying, I mean, I can let Matt do it. It's probably easier.
Do it, Baron.
I come from the net, my format guardian, to mend and defend.
Nice.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
My friends at Mainframe, their hopes, their dreams.
Yeah. So that's Bob. At any rate. That's Bob.
How do I snap? That was really good. That's good.
It sounds a little like
Well, you know what's interesting, too, is the intro changes with the separate seasons.
It does. It does. Right, sometimes it does. It's Megabyte, who we'll talk about in a second. Sometimes it's Dot, depending on kind of who's...
Well, yeah, Dot in charge, like the later around. Portion of season three. Yeah.
So that was kind of cool.
And Megabyte starts it off in season three talking about him as the guardian. Or him as the
lead guy in, around the area. Yeah, of Megaframe.
Right. Megaframe.
Changes it to Megaframe, yeah. So, yeah, they do some interesting stuff throughout the seasons, and they keep it interesting by changing up. It's not just like, oh, here's another game. Let's play it and defend it and hopefully that we win. They change things up with either viral attacks or web encroachments or other viruses coming in or, you know, weird sort of eccentricities within the game. So the game speed is actually at a higher rate than the normal speed within the computer. It's at an accelerated rate, and that comes into play later on too. But we should probably talk about Megabyte and Hexadecimal since we've already talked about the heroes here for a little bit. Like Baron mentioned in his synopsis, they are brother and sister. I don't think you find that out until pretty far down the road.
You find that out in season two.
And there were also, twin cities.
Right.
Mainframe was two cities, and Hexadecimal lived in one and Megabyte in the other. Right. And there was like a very significant destruction of like the other city that Hexadecimal was a part of. Right. I mean, I think like more than half of it was destroyed.
Now, is that Lost Angles or is that just the second sector?
Is that Lost Angles?
I think it is because they have different like sectors and stuff that they name. But Lost Angles, which I always loved, I love the pun of that, is just like this kind of chaotic and ruined city. And it's cool later on when you see everything restored.
And it's like full of nulls.
Yeah, just like completely full of nulls. So everything was just kind of like voided and wiped out. And this crazy... she's kind of a virus. There's a lot of speculation about this too, about what Hexadecimal's true nature really is, whether she's a virus, whether she was like a failed upgrade of a virus, whether she's somewhere in the middle, whether she's just like this raw power kind of incarnate, or she's just like a force of chaos. Because
so
she's not,
I think Hexadecimal is easily like, I remember watching this show a lot, when I was, like, you know, through 94 to 2001, I remember watching this like a lot on television. And I like, disclaimer, I loved this show. And I kind of always watched for Hexadecimal.
She was definitely like the most fun character because she was just out there and insane. You never knew what she was going to
do. And I just like when there was a Hexadecimal episode that came on, like you, like guaranteed it was going to be a little bit insane. So the thing about Hexadecimal that makes her so kind of crazy is that she wears sort of like these like Greek like comedy or tragedy masks that reflect exactly what her emotional state is at that point in time. And so she, like, there's a lot of parts where she will, like, she'll make a quick motion in front of her face and it will change her mask immediately from like one emotion to the next. Like she volleys so quickly, like, but there's always some like interstitial cut where she's either like quickly turning or turning away from the camera, or wiping a hand in front of the face, and like she just goes from like happy to insane in like a split second.
Yeah, she's always insane.
Wonderful. It's very wonderful.
So Megabyte, to counteract her, is kind of like your more traditional villain. He just kind of like broods in his sort of like weird tower on the edge of the city. And he has his idiot sidekicks, Hack and Slash, which are just like these two stupid robots that always screw stuff up. He's a little bit more traditional, but he has some cool, he gets some cool upgrades. He gets some cool moments throughout the series.
Do they ever explain why? So like Megabyte is the traditional villain. Right. Like he's the first villain that like you're introduced to in episode one.
Right.
But like the weird thing is like everybody knows he's a villain. He's clearly just like, I'm the badass.
Yeah.
Like around here. But like he just like calls it, like he has like personal relationships with everybody where he's just like
he's
very
like
sociable.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
like very sociable. Like he's kind of like a kingpin.
He does just like, he just
he's
pops
like
up
the
a
Tony
vid
Soprano
window
with mainframe.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
He pops up a vid window and just like, hey Fong, what's going on? I'm probably gonna like, attack
he
the
pops
central.
Up a Windows 3.1 window.
Exactly.
And,
yeah. He 100% does.
So yeah, that's so
the,
all
with the
all
scroll
the,
bars.
Yeah. All of the vid windows that come up, thank you, Matt. Because all the vid windows that come up are almost like spot on ripoffs of Windows like 3.1X.
Yep.
And like it blows my mind. Like seeing that stuff like now in 2014, like makes me smile because I'm just like, oh my God, we've come so far. Like we've done such a good job of like anytime you're just like, man, my computer and I think I'm running like Windows 7 or something like that right now. Mm-hmm. And I know like 8.1 is out, but like I'm you know, whenever you're just like, God, I wish this computer would work a little bit faster, like just watch Reboot and just appreciate the fact that we've come so far.
Here's the thing, you could probably on your like your current laptop that you're running, whatever it is, you could probably slap together an episode, like a custom made episode of Reboot, no problem.
Yeah.
No problem. Oh, just running it on your own computer. We
should
talk about that for a
second. The computer that I had when I was watching Reboot in 93 was like a 486 with DOS.
Exactly.
Like, I didn't even have Windows 3.1. I had DOS.
Damn, dude. I had my first computer was just a Macintosh Performa.
Oh, you mean Cecil?
Yeah, pretty much.
Did it? Was it like suspended from the ceiling and go around on a track and deliver?
No, but
drinks?
it was like a giant like rectangle block.
Yeah.
That it was like monitor and CPU.
Right.
Like, all to, there was no tower. Like, right. The tower and the monitor were one thing.
And did it have a sassy French attitude
and a little mustache?
I wish it did.
For those who aren't fans of the show, that is basically like the maitre d' slash waiter slash bouncer at Dots Diner.
And here's point number three. We should talk about what dot matrix means.
Sure, go for it.
Dot matrix is a two-dimensional patterned array that we use for printing, or that we used to use for printing.
Yeah, I don't think anybody uses that anymore.
Yeah,
nobody uses
dot matrix anymore.
If you do, you're probably not listening to this podcast, because what's a podcast? Right?
Or you're poor.
Well, that's possible. Yeah. You can probably get them on the cheap. Well, I mean, do you know hexadecimal, and you know megabyte, so I mean, you can do those too if you want.
Oh, so you find out, well, I should stress this, is that you find out that megabyte and hexadecimal, as we mentioned, are brother and sister, and that they are all, they are from a strain of a virus called kilobyte.
Yeah, which I always had a problem with them blending like biology and computer viruses because
not it's hard.
Even close.
It's not. That's obviously why they were doing that. I mean, like, there are a lot of times that they mention like Megabyte. He's just like, oh, I'm going to infect things. And he would just kind of put his hand on it and infect it like right away.
Whether sprites or vehicles or kind of anything.
Just,
that was kind of cool, actually. Yeah.
Or like power suits.
Yes.
You know, There's so many times that like Megabyte's just like,
I think in the first episode, he was in a game with Bob and Dot, and he takes over the user's
it's like a pod racer,
the user's like spaceship or like whatever it was. But Bob actually called it like a viral infection, and I was like, you know, that's like a little too biological for like the computer world, but I was still like, you know, it was cool just to see like, you know, the viruses are like infecting things and taking over system resources.
Yeah, that was cool.
And I think Fong actually introduces Megabyte to Bob and says that he has like infected servers in every sector of the city. So,
yeah, he's basically like that mafioso kingpin at that point. Like that's how they kind of played him up.
So like if we break it down, like kilobyte, megabyte, and then later gigabyte, when we finally get to it, those are just units of digital information.
Right.
And a hexadecimal, which is a slight departure from that, is just a positional number system that's in base 16.
Yeah. So they basically
if you don't know what base 16 is, Google it and figure it out.
Just Google it. There's nobody called base 16. But yeah, they basically just took a lot of like computer terms that were like the new kind of like cool lingo to have and just slapped them on stuff in this show. And I think it works fine. You know,
well, the funny thing is that like, so Dave, when I was talking with you earlier, and Matt, I want you and I to pick on Dave for this.
Oh, good.
All the like the vid windows that like kept popping up, Dave was just like, "Oh, that looks like malware." And I was like, "No, bro, like you've never used Windows like 3.1. Like, what's going on here?" Like, but I mean, to his point, like you realize like 1994 on that was like around. I mean, with commercial internet becoming available, like early commercial internet. And Matt, you brought up a good point too. There were like a lot of like BBSs, like bulletin board systems that were available that had like interconnected like documents that were available that were out there on a public internet that people could access. But it was like very rudimentary, very basic in terms of what was available. But as the internet began to grow and develop, like, yeah, of course, like you had a lot of these like hacker terms like virus. You know, and things that became like very prominent, and Dave, to a lesser extent, malware obviously kind of came into the fold at that point.
Hey, man, this is not my forte, so I'm just gonna take you at your word because I don't know what's going on. Like, reboot is the extent of my computer knowledge, computer lingo knowledge. That's all I got.
I want to give this is gonna be a non sequitur, but I want to give a shout out to our friend John Helter. Who I can't say the name of this show without thinking of our buddy John, who the phrase reboot and the tapping of like
of the chest,
PI
yeah.
on his chest is
a Tourette's like response.
It's, yeah,
from
it's conditioned. It's very Pavlovian.
It's a Pavlovian response to John being a little bit drunk.
I'll tell you this.
Him being super, super drunk.
So Halloween one time, this is strictly just for John because no one else gives a shit. But John
and no one else knows John.
Nobody else knows John.
John and now his wife, Kate, were dressed as a PC and a Mac, respectively. So Kate was basically just like an iPhone cover, which I thought was hilarious because I thought people were going to be coming up and like poking her buttons all night, which I thought that was a little awkward, but yeah, what are you going to do? So, and then John went as a PC. So he went with all these like patches that he cut out as like upgrades and like viral like corrections. And like, so he was just covered in these like stickers by the end of the night. But his favorite thing to do while we were playing beer pong was to do that reboot thing. So he would just double tap his heart, like his chest, shout reboot, and then he would sink every single shot. Every time he said reboot, he would just sink a shot. It was the weirdest thing and the nerdiest thing I've seen in a long time. He did it. He sank every shot. Reboot. And he just kept getting drunker and drunker. Good times. Nice little segue. So I don't know where we go from that.
That was really nice.
That was a curveball.
Like I'm sure John will not listen to this episode.
Well, I'll tell you what. Sure. Since John Helter's a character, maybe we should talk about some of the characters in this show.
Segue!
Yeah. We do get some other interesting ones that come in. What's your guys' favorite kind of, like, ancillary character? Like, who do you like that comes in either in later episodes or is only featured for, like, one episode that just kind of has, like, a one-off kind of thing? Who do you guys like?
You know, I really liked Mouse.
You like Mouse? Okay. I think she's a fan favorite, because nobody knows quite what is up with her. She's very, like, stylistically interesting. So why don't you tell the folks about Mouse?
Awesome. Well, the orange static hair was actually kind of, like, my favorite thing, because it was really the first the first non-static thing about all the characters.
Right.
Like, you know, none of their hair, like, basically moved. I mean, Andrea's moved, like,
it's real creepy.
Yeah, Andrea's moved, like, later
later
seasons.
On, yeah.
But, yeah, like, Bob had dreads, and the dreads were all, like, blended together and didn't move.
They were, like, purplish silver dreads that looked like just slugs on his head. They're real creepy.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Mouse, I mean, I think she was... think they introduced her as like a
she's
hacker.
She's a hacker. I mean, she hacks into everything. Yeah. They never explain like if it's
but
a
she
program,
was kind of like a
mercenary.
She's like a mercenary,
right? Right. Yeah.
Like mercenary character.
Hacker for hire.
Like yeah. And she worked for Megabyte. I think in the early part of one season, but then joins Dot and Enzo. In the later seasons when Bob is trapped in the web.
Yeah, and that actually
so
happens
she's
a
like,
lot,
so, I mean, like, would you say that she's sort of like, if she's a hacker for hire, would you say that she's sort of like Hugh Jackman in the movie Swordfish?
You could say that.
Perfect.
I suppose.
Yeah. That's all I wanted to hear.
Hugh Jackman, who knows 512-bit encryption.
Oh, my God. Don't even get me started on that. That's a completely separate podcast.
We'll change that one up, because I didn't know. I was like, yeah, sounds good to me. What do I know?
That shit just curls my skin.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, that's, I need to go to the doctor.
Yeah, that's like a
yeah,
third degree.
I just shed like a snake. Oof. When I hear that. I just get so creeped out.
Well, moving off of that, what 512
encryption.
What was one of your
face?
Favorite other characters? Did you have any? Did you have any other ones?
Yes.
Who did you like that came in? I want to know. I'm curious.
So I liked Fong.
You like Fong?
Yeah. I liked Fong a lot. I wanted to actually ask you guys. So, like, I looked up – I was a little bit curious. Like, it seems like – when I posed the question whether or not Bob was good at his job, and we all agreed that, no, Bob is not good at his job.
No, he's terrible. Glitch is good at his job of being, like, his key
tool. Thank
but that's
you.
It.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to talk about, is that there are two things. So Fong and Glitch. So Fong and like I don't know how to address this. Like Fong is the only person in this show that actually has like a
stereotype.
Yeah, he's a stereotype. He's a straight up stereotype. Yep. And Fong is Asian. And he is, he's like a mentor, and has like a lot of specific historical information about the city. And so he relays that to Bob. And so like, there are so many multiple instances where like a problem has arisen, and Bob is like, I gotta go see Fong. And then he beats Fong in a game, and then Fong was just like, you've proven yourself worthy of getting my information. And you're just like, oh, my God, like, you
well,
are.
What's hilarious is he's like, there's an old readme file that says.
Oh, that killed me.
They use that all the time.
That my brain just exploded when he said readme file.
Whoever read the readme file?
Fong, no, apparently. That was his job.
Matt, RTFM. I mean, come on, read the fucking manual, bro. Like, that's beginner shit right there. I mean, it's killing me. It kills me that, like, you know, like, so you have Bob, you have Enzo, and you have Dot, and they are like the only three people who actually look like, I want to say, like human beings.
Yeah, yeah, they're humanoids. Okay. Everybody else is either like a zero
humanoids.
Or a one sprite kind of thing. Like that's
exactly.
Really all they are.
And so then you have Hexadecimal, and you have Megabyte, mm-hmm. who kind of are just like these crazy
anthropomorphic.
They're kind of
like virus, like sort of virus, like you know, it's just, but they're not quite human in the way that we would expect them to look. And then you have Fong, who's just like straight up Asian.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like,
they do not try to hide it whatsoever.
It sounds like they do not, like, he kind of has like a Fu Manchu, like kind of like long goatee.
His name's Fong, like, for Christ's sakes. Is that a technical term at all that I don't know?
No.
I think they spelled it like Phoung or something like that.
Yeah, Phoung.
Yeah. Fong.
And it was just like, it's so, I don't know. I just like, I took having it be like the only really like identifiable nationality that was in there. There were times where I was just like, oh my God, like this guy is like the worst trope of like television trope of something that's like just unnecessary.
And they don't
just
change like, it at all for the four seasons.
No,
like he's just stuck there. He never gets an upgrade.
What was that word we were showing around that Fong used before we started recording?
You can take
what
that one, Sean.
I actually don't remember.
You're dropping all the knowledge.
I actually don't remember. I'm sorry.
The Wisdom?
No, it was the one we were making fun
you
of.
You don't remember the Wisdom? Jesus. You made me say it. The Wisdom.
The Wisdom.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's a little bit insulting that they have the ability to create, like, all these... They have the ability, and they've created this entire world.
Right. Everything else is amazing. This is, like, the one little weird
amazing
blank.
World. Yeah. And then they're just like, we're going to put all of, like, the mystical historical information in this, like, Asian, like, golden walking robot.
Now, here's the thing. If you're going to do that and make it like, okay, so this is the program. That's just the representation of the program. If that's how you want to get away with it, fine. But then it's got to be consistent across all these other things. When in later episodes, some of the characters, which I think we'll talk about them in a second because they're actually some of my favorites, this change, these characters actually go to visit other computers, other Twin Cities to Mainframe. They visit other places where they have a wise old character that knows the history of the city. They're never Asian. They're never like old Confucius style programs. They're usually just kind of like old. Some of them are like old hillbillies. Some of them are just old and they have a beard. You know, if you're going to do that, at least be consistent with it. But
yeah,
no,
I know.
Just...
I mean, like, if you're going to, like, look, if you're going to have somebody like contain a whole lot of wisdom, like, sure, give him some big long facial hair in order to show,
yeah, give
like,
him a cane,
how,
whatever.
In order to show, like, age,
right.
And, like, you know,
and the Gandalf style, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like, they made Fong as, like, a super frail, like, he's the old master trope, like, television
yes.
trope
yes,
of, like,
exactly.
somebody who is, like,
Mr. Miyagi.
A lot of wisdom, and like you underestimate him at first, but like he has like all of these like mystical powers. Like, and there's one episode where specifically where like they're in the process of doing an upgrade to the city, mm-hmm. and so they power down the city, and the file that they open up that has this upgrade in it is actually just Megabyte in disguise,
right.
And he attacks them, and like he drains Fong, like he accesses, like he infects Fong and like to steal the password from him in order to access this system. And so as he's doing it, like Fong like astral projects himself to
right.
Bob at one
yeah,
point.
Yeah, it's
just
some weird
like,
stuff that goes
he's just
on.
Like,
there.
He's just like, use his greed. And just like, and it's like one of those things where it's just like, man, like he is just playing into this trope so. Like, so poorly. It's just, like, half-assed information. He's, like, trying to tell him, like, trying to make Bob think for himself. And Bob doesn't have a fucking clue. Like, Bob's an idiot. Like, and we've already
established. Bob's a stoner with dreads.
Bob is crappy at his job. And, like, it's sad because you realize that, and this is my way of segueing into this, you realize that the real hero in this show is the component that Bob has on his wrist, which is called Glitch.
Yes. There's many interesting things that happen with Glitch, but go ahead. Yeah.
And Glitch is seriously the star of this show.
It's his key tool. It does everything you need it to do.
And like it just like he just like every time Bob's in a like a bind, he's just like Glitch.
Fix
thing.
It. Yeah.
And it just like it blows my mind. That, like, if Bob is supposed to be this, like, guardian, and he's, like, guardian 452 is what you find out. Like 451 Bobs before him must have been dumber than Bob 452, and that's scary. Like, that's a frightening realization that, like, these other guardians are dumb. Like, they're supposed to have, like, trained in, like, the supercomputer
right.
that they talk about all
right.
the time. Wow. Like the education that they receive there is like,
well, here's my theory on this. There's a lot of theories on this, but, on later episodes, you do get to see the Guardians kind of like, they actually kind of invade Mainframe for a second because they're
right.
trying to prevent against this, future virus called Daemon, which is something that comes up in like the fourth season. And we were trying to figure out, like, there are a couple of movies, one called Daemon Rising, another one, I think called The Tale of Two Bobs. We were trying to sort them out. It was a little difficult on Hulu to see if they were sorted by the actual movies or just, like, the episodes themselves. So that was a little confusing.
But and I'm just going to jump in right now and just say that a daemon spelled
D-A-E-M-O-N
is just, it's just a computer program that runs in the background.
Yeah.
Like that runs, it's a process that runs in the background.
So nothing to do with the virus. Yeah. Like it's usually see mailer daemon pop up. Yeah.
I'm pulling my fucking hair out. Like every time that they say these
but
terms.
But as a kid, you didn't know that. They were just cool words. You didn't know. Did you know this as a kid? You didn't know this as a kid. Get out of here.
This came out in 1994. Like, I probably started watching it then. Like, I was 14, 15 years old. Like, I had, like, a rudimentary understanding of computers. Like, it became my career.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I had an understanding of what was going on. Like, watching some of this stuff, I'm sure I didn't, like, I'm sure my 14, 15-year-old brain was more just sitting there watching it and just being like, oh, cool, they're talking about stuff that I'm aware of. But, like, 34-year-old Sean, like, watching it, is just like, oh, my God.
It's just so aggravated.
Cringeworthy. This is so aggravating.
I loved it, though, dude. I'll tell you what I liked the most, actually, was there's a season where Enzo and Andrea, who is, like, a game sprite that kind of gets trapped within Mainframe. She just kind of pops up later. She's another one of the strong female characters that Sean was talking about. They pop up, and they, after this battle with Megabyte, tricks a bunch of them. He crushes Bob's glitch key tool, so that means Bob is even more useless than usual. So at this point, when he throws Bob like into a portal that takes him into the web, not really any big loss, even though everybody in Mainframe is kind of pissed and sad about that. Bob is lost for a while. So Enzo
gets, an entire season.
He gets lost in the web.
Yes, so he's gone. You don't see him for a little while. So what happens is Enzo kind of takes over as the new guardian. So he's still a little kid. Before too long, they get trapped in a game that they can't win. So what they decide to do is they change, hit their reboot thing, their little PI.
Reboot.
They change it into a form that is, I guess, the game sprite mode. They change it into some sort of mode that they never really talked about before. And it allows them to kind of hop from game to game, so from computer to computer.
Really?
Because if they would have lost, they would have been pretty much deleted and just nullified. So it allows them to hop from computer to computer. What that does, since we mentioned earlier in the show, this accelerated game rate, they age, they grow. So the next time you see them, they're not these little kids anymore. Enzo is like this grizzled, like muscle-bound,
jacked
like
5
o'clock shadow.
Biker,
he's got this like a leather vest, and he's like got this gun on his hip, and he's got 5 o'clock shadow, and he's got a weird eye. That, like, it's so bizarre. He looks like Bishop from X-Men. And then Andrea,
or Cable,
some combination of the two. And then Andrea, like Matt mentioned earlier, is just like too hot for kids TV. It's kind of like, it's just a weird kind of getup that she's got on. But they've obviously both,
it's like a mermaid sort of mercenary.
Yeah, it's a little strange. But they're both
what season was this in?
This was in the middle of three. It was like three.
Oh, well, that's because like Dot takes over,
right?
For Fong.
Yeah, she becomes the new command. Yeah,
she takes over command because everybody else is gone. So the only two guardians they had, which one was an idiot with a tool that did everything, and another one is a kid with a broken tool. They were gone, so they had nothing left. So Dot kind of took over. This is where things start to get a little bit darker, and I like that, especially because the show kind of like it grew and matured with its audience. And I thought that was kind of cool as a kid. I like that they were like doing things that were a little more, maybe not adult, but a little more involved. A little more thought put into them. They weren't quite as goofy. They weren't really talking, you know, breaking that fourth wall anymore. That was kind of cool. They still did some goofy stuff. Like, they did bring Enzo's little kid character back in later on, that was like the jump the shark moment for me.
That pissed me off.
Yeah, but it didn't last much longer.
And the two
so
Bobs
okay.
thing, that was not... That
That was weird. What?
I mean, I got why they why it happened, because they backed up the system and everything like that, but I was just like, this is stupid.
So,
this is bad writing.
So basically, they should have ended it at kind of like the third season. And we'll talk about why they should have ended it with that third season finale in a second. But just to give the viewers or the listeners an idea, there was that fourth season. There were only 8 episodes. I'm not 100% sure how the movies kind of broke down there. But it ended with a cliffhanger. It ended with Megabyte like now upgraded and in a really creepy design change for him. With the new technology they had available, real creepy looking, he was able to get control of the central like mainframe, and he was going to hunt our heroes. And that's it. That's all we get. It literally ends with him saying like, "Prepare for the hunt." And that's it. So that's where we're left. Now, before we get to more recent news about a reboot, I definitely want to talk about the third season finale. So, Matt, I know you're a fan of this segment of the episode. I'll let you talk about that in a second. I just want to give the guys a synopsis of the episode real quick. Things have gone to shit in Mainframe, and they can't fix them. Can't patch them up, can't mend and defend, can't do anything.
What an excellent assessment of the situation, Dave.
I appreciate that. That's as quick as I can get to it. Things have gone to shit. It's basically this this little kid that is just like downloading all these virus-filled computer games or whatever.
How much pornography do you think so much, looking at?
So much. All of it. Well, based all that on was available three, in 96.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, everything
pretty
that was available
the
in 96.
That's worth of pornography
is on this computer. Which is why it's just full of holes and just completely rotten. So, so they decide to... A game comes down, they decide to lose it, and not even attempt to play it. They just let the user win, and that forces basically like a system instability that crashes the system. And they cross their fingers and hope that the user is going to, like, reboot the system. That's exactly what happens. So everybody comes back, both Twin Cities of Mainframe come back, even Hexadecimal comes back because they include her in the party because now she's kind of a good guy. So everybody comes back. That would be a great ending by itself. What they do instead, or additionally rather, because I really like this, is they add a musical number to the end of this episode, which is fantastic. Boy. I'll let Matt talk about that because I know he's a fan. I think he's a fan.
So it was kind of like an opera piece, but it recaps pretty much the entire season.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, the entire series.
Well, more like the third season, but yeah, a lot of it.
Yeah, I was going to say it's about, like, the last little bit of season two and then, like, the whole of season three.
Right.
But, I mean, it was just – it was really comical because there's, like, little things like – gags in the song, like they were doing, like there was like a scrolling background, and if you catch it for a second, it says don't scroll any further than this, and then I pull it back really fast, and
it's like a really shoddy production, but on purpose, so it's really funny.
Yeah, and like I mean, it's just like full of kind of little gags like that, but the song was actually like really creative.
Yeah.
And they did it well. So, I mean, I thought it was just like a funny little shtick in the show. So.
And that would have been a perfect way to end it because they basically say, like, all these bad things happened, then we reset, and now we're all back together in Mainframe. And they end it kind of with, like, the reboot kind of theme, and then end. And that's it. And if they were going to end it there, I would have been okay. You know? And then they went forward with this fourth season that was kind of, like, introducing these new weird viruses and these new characters. And then they just ended it on a cliffhanger. It was kind of crap. So... I would recommend definitely watching this. Watch the first three seasons. If you really, really, really want to see that last season, then you can watch it too. Everything's on Hulu Plus, from what I know. And it was really easy to watch it, so check that out. And they're not a sponsor, unfortunately, but that's the easiest place to find them. Or you can go to our site, where we're going to have links for the definitive Mainframe edition of the entire reboot series for sale through Amazon too. So if you really want to pick that up on the hard disk, you can pick that up. Now, do you guys have anything else on the show before we talk about the more recent news of a reboot?
Anything I loved this show when it came out, like, in the mid-90s. I watched it, like, nonstop.
Yeah.
And when it came out in syndication a couple years after that, I watched it the whole way through then.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was fantastic. The fourth season, I was really looking forward to that, and then it was just, like, terribly done, and I was like, well, this is a series of down notes for reboot, but it was still fun.
Yeah. Sean, anything else?
I would say if you are thinking about watching any episode, you need to watch season 3 episode 1 because there are so many moments that are in that episode, like that one particular episode, that are unbelievable.
In what way? I don't know which way you're leaning on this.
So the game is that they are in a like a zombie apocalypse game.
Okay.
The user is rendered as a Bruce Campbell ripoff.
Okay.
With a shotgun in hand and a chainsaw on his other hand. And it, like, it pans in on him, and he just goes groovy.
Nice.
And you're like, oh, my God.
There are a lot of, like, pop culture references. There's Blues Brothers. There's I talked to Sean when I first started watching this. I was like, man, the animation is, like, straight out of the Dire Straits video, Money for Nothing. And then if you watch the sixth episode, they featured those characters from that music video. So at that point, I fell in love with it again because I'm just like, okay, you know what's going on. Everything's going to be great from here on out.
You know that you're terrible.
Yeah.
Enzo in season 3 episode 1 reboots and becomes Michael Jackson in the Thriller video.
Okay.
Dot Matrix reboots and she turns into Elvira, and Matt, to your point, she has giant boobs.
So not a mono breast anymore.
They're no mono breasts. They are like there is massive CGI cleavage.
Find it on DeviantArt
or cleavage GI.
No, boy.
There is just there's a lot going on in that episode, and it was very entertaining to watch. And just the Bruce Campbell like flat out Army of Darkness, Evil Dead ripoff. I was just like, oh my god, they knew what they were doing. They knew that they were campy, but they were having so much fun with it.
Yeah,
enjoyable.
Enzo was Scorpion from Mortal Kombat 2, I think, right?
That was in the episode with the game that they couldn't win.
Yeah, the game's right. Yeah, that was that game.
That was a Mortal Kombat ripoff, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're able to inject in this game so many, like, non-sequitur pop culture references.
Oh, so much fun, too.
It's so enjoy. Every time they hit, like, every time they sit there and they're like, reboot, you're just like, what are they going to become? Fingers crossed, something cool.
Something crazy.
They don't disappoint. They do not disappoint.
No. And it's funny, too. So. They have fun with it. So, like Matt said, he becomes, like, the Scorpion character. He reboots into Scorpion, and then he's kind of like, and he rips his mask off and, like, takes this big, like, deep breath, and he's like, man, I can't talk with this thing on. Just stupid stuff like that. But it was pretty funny.
Come here.
Get over here. Yeah, so pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. Now, if you guys are interested in the reboot.
And I am.
Reboot. I still don't know a whole lot on this. So, again, I went over to Reboot Revival. They've got
Reboot.
Kind of the most up-to-date stuff. These guys talked with a fellow named Michael Heffernan, and I believe he's CEO or a higher-up in Rainmaker Entertainment. And they seem like they're interested in a reboot. Now, this would be the year to do it because it's 20th anniversary. So unless you want to wait 5 more years to do it, I don't know. So,
no, I'd like to wait. I'd like to not wait.
You'd like to not wait? See, the thing is, though, there's not a lot of details on it. They say that the classic characters, they're going to include them. It's not just going to be a cameo. Like, they're not just going to be on, like, a billboard in the background or something. Like, they're gonna bring the major characters in, but that they've been watching the series to see, like, okay, what stuff can they keep? What works? What do they really need to upgrade? I don't know. I mean, I was a fan of the most recent Tron animated series that was on.
Tron Legacy.
I think it was Uprising. Legacy was the movie.
Uprising. Tron Uprising. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's Tron cool. Uprising is amazing.
It was really good. And I like the animation. I like the story they were doing. I really like the voice cast. I don't think that's on anymore. I think that's done.
No, it only went one season.
And that's the thing. It's like
thanks, Disney XD.
Disney XD. But it's like, if that can't succeed, and that's got Disney behind it, I don't know how a reboot is going to do. Like, what are you going to do this day and age to make it cutting edge like it was in 94? To make it different from everything else that's out there, what they want to do is they want to, like, have kids be able to, like, access it through their tablets or through their iPhones to be able to have, like, this interactive kind of thing, which you kind of have to in this day and age. But I don't know how you do that. That's the thing.
I'm listening.
I don't know how you do it. And that's it. That's as far as
I would like to know more.
Yeah. Would you like to know more?
Thank you.
But unfortunately, that's all the details that they've said. They haven't given any actual details, just like thoughts and concepts. We saw what might be an image of the new Bob, which does not look very exciting.
Promising.
Promising or any positive adjective.
Looks like if you were to, like, poorly 3D render Nathan Fillion's face.
Yeah, and give him, like...
In an eggplant purple.
eggplant purple yeah. With, like, thick black eyebrows and silver slug hair. So I don't know. I love this series. I'd be okay if it came back and was done well. I'd also be okay if it just lived in history and it was never really.
Yeah, it either needs to remain in memory as is or come back and be better. Coming back and being worse is not going to.
And unfortunately, that's the way that things have gone lately. I mean, Transformers is still doing pretty well. They've got a lot of new things kind of going on.
Dave, I'm sorry.
No, not the movie, not the movie.
I'm going to cut you off.
The cartoons, not the movies. Even though they're not great, but they're doing okay. But like Thundercats, they tried to bring that back. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't quite the same. With Reboot, man, I don't know. I just don't know if that fan base is there. But I don't know. We'll leave it up to you guys.
If they're going to do it, they really, you know, I mean, just throwing in my two cents on something I'm unqualified to speak about is, you know, they're going to, if they're going to do it, like, really, in my opinion, they, because they were kind of, you know, really embracing, like, you know, at the time, new technology,
right.
You know, for this show, they need to be embracing, you know, new technology in the same way for this show. So, you know, it's got to be like a lot of mobile based, you know, instead of having the sprites, you got to have apps, you know, shit like that. So,
yeah, I mean, I can see it. It's definitely a rich area for storytelling. I just don't know if they have the resources to pull that off and to do it well. That's the only thing I'm concerned about.
You know what? I'd be amenable to them giving it a shot.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I mean, kickstarted.
I mean, here's
man,
the thing.
Whatever.
I mean, like, you know, the biggest thing that in all of these reboots, mm-hmm. I'm okay with somebody trying. I'm okay with somebody taking it and running with the idea. If people don't rally behind it, if they're not entertained, then that's fine.
Yeah. Shut it down.
Shut it down.
Here's
but,
the thing.
I mean,
yeah.
really, just the big thing that I know I've stressed this before, and I want to stress it one more time, is just stop going to watch Michael Bay movies.
That's going to be Sean's tagline from now on.
I am going to champion that from now on. Just stop Michael Bay.
Can I ask you this?
.com is the website that I've...
Can people find you on Twitter?
We're not getting there yet. Can people go see the new Ninja Turtles movie? Because that is produced by Michael Bay. Can people go see it? I don't know anything about it yet. It looks okay, surprisingly.
I don't think it does.
You don't think it does? Okay.
Well, I mean, you know what? Here's the thing. We're not talking about Teenage Mutant. We're not talking about TMNT right now. So, I mean, I'm going to avoid this. Just
fair enough.
Stop if you continue to put money in his pocket, ladies and gentlemen, you are a part
of
it.
Well, he just re-upped at the studio, so he's not going anywhere for a while.
Damn it.
Sorry, dude. That's the way it works. In Hollywood. Oh, boy. So do you guys want to do some plugs and some contact info now? Because unfortunately,
well,
that's all the time
I think we can say unanimously we all recommend.
Yes, most definitely. Up until and not including the fourth season. If you want to see it, just, you know, to see the whole thing, do it. But I think you'd be happier just stopping at three. But hey,
and it's all on Hulu, so you can. Did I say Hulu weird?
Onto Hulu. You
I think
said
Cthulhu.
You said Cthulhu, I think.
Cthulhu.
Yeah. I think you channeled the Dark Lord of the Underworld.
You can watch it all on hplovecraft.com. Yeah. It's all available on Hulu.com. Yeah. So check it out. I mean,
Our Amazon link and fund this here podcast, because we're obviously all professionals here, so that would be good.
So just kids, hey, while Dave's not listening, everybody, just go and watch it on Hulu.com for free. It's free. It's cool.
Did
just
I miss anything,
that.
Guys?
No,
cut out
you didn't
for
miss
a
anything. We just did a duck blind between me and anybody.
Oh, okay. Right no, that's cool. So, I don't know. I thought my computer frizzed out. I need to reboot. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, kids. What do you have coming up in the near future? And let the folks know about it.
Oh, my gosh. Baron, go ahead.
I'm a little busy for the next 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, right.
So. Just pretty much this podcast and a slow descent into madness.
Into Lovecraftian madness. Sean, what about you?
I have got one final performance.
Nice.
For Washington Improv Theater's current run called Binge. You can see me perform on August 9th with Knox. That's NOX ! At 8 p.m., you can purchase tickets at WashingtonImprovTheater.com.
Very nice. And where can the folks find out more about you and your social media meanderings?
Oh, snap. You can find more about me on Twitter and Instagram and at Sean Paul Ellis.
And Matt, where can we find you?
I'm at MattSF07.
How is it not bag of sandwiches?
I'm so upset by this. I thought it would have been
bag of sandwiches at Stop Michael Bay.
Oh, I like that one. I like that one. I fully support that one. You can find me on Twitter at DrClawMD. You can find us at SaturdayMorningCartoons.com. That's morning with a U. You can also find our Tumblr page, which Sean has been populating with G-rated tunage. That's over at SaturdayMorningCartoons.tumblr.com. You can also find us on Twitter at MorningTunes. All those mornings are again spelled with a U. Now, for a very fantastic and special and in no other way excellent next show, 13th
episode.
Oh my
gosh, Dave, this is your pick.
It's my pick, dude. I'm very
excited. What
are
you picking, buddy?
Well, here's the thing. So remember I mentioned Tony J earlier on in this episode? Do you guys remember that?
Am I going to want to hurt you?
I don't think so. I mean, I hope not. It's not Tony.
God, I hope this is dinosaur-based.
No, it's not dinosaur-based. I leave that to Sean. I'm not going to ape one of his picks.
Dinosaurs.
No, don't even. Nobody send in a dinosaur's theme. I'm very upset. I'm very upset. Come on, people. Right. We know you got it in you.
All right, what do you got? What do you got in?
I'm going to go with Mighty Max. Mighty Max.
Okay.
You know, a little more obscure. Okay. It was really only like one or two seasons. Mighty Max. Not to be confused with Fantastic Max or Mighty anything else. Mighty Max.
Okay.
It's a very different performance for Tony J. We'll get into that next week. So this
will be relevant, too, because it's in the same time frame.
Yes.
It's in the 93-94 time frame,
exactly.
So this is perfect.
And I hope I remember it fondly. I hope it's as cool as I remember, and I hope you guys don't hate me.
I hope it's not. I hope this is another cop, and you are so
my track record is not. It's not real good right now.
This was like the Mighty Max was like the boys' version of like
Polly Pocket. That's exactly
right?
What it was. So it was another toy created, but it was actually really good.
You dick.
It was good, man. But we'll get into that next week. We'll get into that, and we'll see if the guys continue to let me host this show. So until next time with Mighty Max, this has been Saturday Morning Cartoons. Thanks for listening.